this podcast.
Water Polo Expert Talk. Get the insights. Hello and welcome back to the Water Polo Expert Talk podcast. My guest in this episode today is Tony Azevedo, and Tony is a former player of the US national team and now founder of his own company. As a five-time Olympian, Tony shares his memories with us and provides us with some more information about his efforts with its clinics and water polo camps. I hope you enjoy our talk about the Olympics, the difference between water polo in Europe and the US, and our responsibility of each water polo player around the globe to promote our sport as much as possible. Okay, yeah, so let's jump into the next podcast episode. So today we have a special guest from overseas as a guest in our episode, so which is Tony Azevedo. So Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Excited.
Yeah, so I'm also very excited. So it's also my pleasure to have you here in the podcast as a five-time Olympian attendee. So it's really the record at the moment here in this podcast. So we have several persons with one or two times. So you are actually the leader at the moment. So the high score.
There you go. Don't call Estiardi and then I'm good.
Okay. Let's start with a short introduction maybe from yourself. So I would hand it over to you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I finished my last Olympics in 2016 in Brazil, where I was born, in Rio. And then recently I just retired, started my own company with Maggie Steffens, who's the captain of the U.S. women's team, called 6-8 Sports. And really our goal is just to figure out a way to kind of change the sport, right? To kind of get this sport that we all love and bring it into the mainstream with data and analytics and technology and really focusing on the individual athlete. I think I've been a part of many clubs and organizations and NGBs, and everyone's worried about the overall picture of themselves. And when I retired, I realized that someone A needs to focus on the sport in general, just the sport of water polo, and also every individual. Right. If you're part of a club, but you're maybe not the best player, it's hard for you to really excel. And so we've kind of taken a different approach than everyone. We focus on every single individual in the world. I mean, we try to with our app and with all the things that we're doing. And so it's been exciting and traveling around and now, you know, being stuck at home, but still trying to find innovative ways to talk water polo, to grow the sport. You mentioned before I started a podcast as well. And I think the more podcasts, the more live stream videos, the more we can get this sport we all love out to the media, the better it is for all of us, you know? Yeah. So I've been a huge fan of anyone talking water polo, and what you're doing is great because we need it. We need it. We don't do it enough.
Yeah, so and especially what you mentioned is also the ability right now during these times where you are, from a technological point of view, able to stream and to watch water polo online, which is much more easier as in the past. Yeah, so because all of the techniques and the methods you are able to watch and to stream something into the web, so which is much more easier as in it was in the past. You were born in Brazil. You retired or had your last Olympic Games in Brazil, in Rio. How do you start coming to play water polo at the very beginning?
For me, you know, my dad was a coach. He was actually a soccer coach and a Spanish teacher. And when I came from, you know, from Brazil to the U.S. and I was obsessed with baseball. I love baseball. My grandfather was drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates, and I wanted to be a baseball player. But I got the opportunity to be a ball boy. I started 8 years old, and I played, you know, a little bit of water polo, a little baseball, basketball. But at 14 years old is when I quit everything and decided, you know, I wanted to be an Olympian. And I was a ball boy in the 96 Olympics, and I saw Spain and my idol Manuel Estiardi win the gold medal. And it was it was water polo from there on out.
Yeah, so it's then really the main moment, let's say it that way, main moment for you in your sports career, saying, okay, I would like to play water polo from this time on, seeing these guys in the pool during the Olympics and saying, okay, this is my sports.
Yeah, and you know, that's why I'm such a big advocate on trying to promote our athletes, because for me as a kid, I was inspired by an athlete, you know, the Spanish Olympic team. I was inspired by Manuel Astiardi. It was the reason that I did everything I could to go to the Olympics at 18 years old. And we don't have enough idols in our sport. I mean, in, you know, if you're in Hungary and Serbia and Croatia, you do, because the sport's so popular. But yep, out here in the U.S., and I don't know how it is for you in Germany, but we don't do a great job of glorifying our athletes. So they look at water polo and they think, oh, you know, that's a good sport. You shouldn't think that. You should think of water polo and you go, oh, Maggie Steffens is the greatest ever, or Ashley Johnson, or, you know, maybe Tony back in the day. You know, you should think of two or three athletes, because you do in other sports. You think of soccer, you think Ronaldo, Messi. You think of basketball, you think LeBron. You know, and in our sport, it doesn't have that all over the world, and we need to change that.
Yeah, yeah. So, which is quite the same situation for Germany. So, where we have soccer, for example. Yeah. So, it's really dominated by the soccer area as a sport, and I think this is also related to the point you mentioned before regarding the media coverage. Yeah. So, let's call it media coverage, where kids are not really able to see these sports, and they are not really able to see. Speaking for Germany, not seeing the German national team, for example, yeah. And the only chance is really the web or the streaming and so on. And when these kind of clubs or events or tournaments are not really happening in the web, so then you are really not get into the right target audience where you can get the kids coming to the pool. So, which is really what I would like to say is it's everything is connected somehow, yeah? So the media coverage, the thing that water polo is in Germany, not really the highest sport.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's why I think by doing these kind of podcasts, by talking water polo, by live streaming, we're starting to act like the bigger sports. We're catching up water polo. We're hopefully trying to get to at least act like we're one of the big dogs, and that's what we need. And I think also, you know, I'll put it back on the athletes. When I was a player, you know, I was a big advocate on my national team. You know, when we traveled, we looked good, right? And when it was about how do you portray yourself, and I made sure everyone, when we did camps, it was talking about the sport, talking about your story. And right now with our athletes, this is something we need to do. You can't just go, if you really care about the future of the sport, you can't just show up and play on your team. And it's not enough. You have to do more, right? You have to, you know, tell your story, go get sponsorships, get on TV, go to these parties that maybe you don't want to go to that have, you know, a celebrity there and talk to them about water polo. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but these are a lot of little things that we need to do to get our sport into the mainstream.
Yeah. I think the combination of each of these single items would then be the success maybe at the end. Yeah. So when you really use or go in the professional area, like other sports, like football, soccer, basketball, whatever. So they are really professional. And this is maybe something the water polo sport as such, or the community is not really, such a professional environment in the past. So I guess you mentioned already that we are on a good way, but we are not on the target at the moment to be professional.
That's right. You know, when I was playing, I started the World Water Polo Players Organization, and the goal was to unite us and to have us start fighting for our contracts and to talk about what the future of the sport is and to have a say with Len and FINA. And, you know, some good things came of it. Hungary started a professional league or organization. Italy started an organization because of it. But it never really fizzled out. And the reason being is, you know, we had athletes that just didn't care. We had athletes that didn't have an email address, you know. And it's like, and it's sad, but it's like, and then we complain about, oh, we don't have, or, you know, FINA's doing all this and we don't like what's going on. Well, where are you, right? You can't just complain when you want to complain. Let's, as a sport, unite and let's fix our problems instead of dwelling, you know, on the past and complaining at one point and then going ahead and saying it's okay the next time. And it's just, we're in this point right now with I believe the sport, especially, you know, all over with Europe, the US, Australia, we're not really connected. We're not one. And that's a big disconnection, and that's gonna limit us from being great, right?
Yeah. So at least it's also, when I understand you correctly, it's more the responsibility of each of us to do a little bit more. So in general, we have much more. So when each of us maybe is doing a little bit more.
That's right.
Telling the story, talking about the sport, maybe also trying to bring kids to the sport, promote it and whatever. So maybe we can have a little impact then with the podcast here.
Yes, I hope.
You know. So do you have any plans maybe after retired from your active career also to be a coach?
You know, obviously I love coaching, right? That's right. You know, I look at myself more as like a teacher now, which is really fun, you know, teaching kids and inspiring them and talking to them about fundamentals and the game itself and tactics and the future. I could see myself being a coach for sure, but the thought process for me always was I saw how hard it was for my dad, how hard it is to be a coach, right? And the other thing is I see how when you are a coach, to be successful, you have to put everything into your team. And if I'm doing that, then I'm really only caring about 15, 16 players. And if that's going to be my destiny, then I won't be there to help grow the sport and to help do everything that I believe needs to be done to change the sport. And so that's really been my goal. And look, you know, if things don't work out the way I wanted to and I end up coaching, you know, I didn't, then, you know, it was too much. But I do think I have a chance, right? We're partnering with New Zealand, South Africa. You know, we're talking, you have partners in Australia. I do think that if we can grow the sport outside of Europe, then there is a better chance for our sport to succeed media-wise, sponsorship-wise, professional league. That's something I'm big thinking about as the professional league here in the U.S. If I'm a coach, you know how it is as a coach too, right? Right now I'm this person who's just helping the sport. So coaches all, we can all talk. But the moment I'm a coach of a team, now that other team coach, we don't maybe talk so much. So that's kind of been, that's the goal.
Yeah. So when you, honestly, a very long history of water polo career. Yeah, so you attend 5 times the Olympic Games, so which is at the minimum 20 years of really high professional water polo playing. Do you have any thoughts in your mind that it's really a record from you personally to attend these kind of event 5 times?
You know, I was asked that, you know, a couple of days ago, just by a parent who said, I can't believe, you know, for 20 years playing at that high of a level, you know, and after I told the story of Ratko Rudic, when we were swimming 10,000 meters a day.
So I heard these kind of stories also from other international podcast guests already.
Oh my goodness.
So which is not only very hard, but it's also very inspiring. So working with him.
That's right. But, you know, when you're doing something you love, I never look back and think how hard it was. I look back and miss the trips and miss my teammates. That's what I miss. I don't miss playing water polo at all. I get in and I don't want to play. I just want to shoot.
So at least you are at the moment able to get in and so
that's right. We're lucky we have this private club here. We're doing an academy, and again, like the inspiration behind the academy goes back to, I want kids, I don't care where you're from, if you have a dream of playing in college in the US, if you want to be the best that you can be, but you're in an area that maybe it's very difficult, that's what we're going to give you this opportunity, right? You're here in the Mecca. we are contacting college coaches all the time. So this is a great opportunity for them.
And so during your whole career, so we mentioned the 20 years of really high professional water polo. How do you motivate yourself? You also mentioned that you don't really looking back and saying, okay, this was maybe not so funny and you missed something. But what kind of motivation? So how do you motivate yourself during these long time, period of time?
Competitiveness, right? I want to win. I you know, every year either ended in joy or misery. And you would start off after 2 weeks of your vacation, right back from ground zero, figuring out how to finish with joy. I mean, it was the life of, you know, professional athlete and water polo player. I mean, ultimately I would wake up every morning and it would either be world championships that year. It would be World League. It would be, you know, Champions League. It would be the Olympics. And it was like, what am I going to do? I want to win. I want to win the gold. I want to beat Serbia. I want to win the Champions League. And so every morning you wake up and you go and then you finish. And we had some terrible years where we didn't get what we wanted and it was misery. And you'd go home and, you know, be very upset and question everything of your life. What are you doing? And then 2 weeks later, you realize, let's get back to it. I'm even more motivated. Let's do it. I want to be better and better and better. And I mean, that's really it as an athlete. Like if you play a sport, you play because you love it. And if you love it, you want to win, right? So if you want to win, you got to go out there every day and play as hard as you can. And it just helps when you love the sport.
You already mentioned that you love to play and you want to win. So when you do something from your heart, then it's not really, it feels not really like work.
Yeah.
Then in this case, it's maybe hard at the moment during the training. But it's not really hard looking back maybe today on these kind of days. Maybe when you're also saying you're really upset, maybe sometimes after not so good periods of time during your career. What was your personal highlight during the Olympic Games? So are there any memories from your side? You're saying, okay, this was really one of the nicest moments or impressing moments maybe from your side attending the Olympic Games.
For sure. I mean, the number one in my head is, you know, we're in the 2008 Olympic Games. We qualify first in the bracket, barely beating Germany, by the way. It was a controversial backhand by Charvides. They called it back. We ended up qualifying first. And Serbia ended up losing on purpose to play us in the semis because they didn't want to play Hungary in the semis and then Croatia. And, you know, Serbia had never lost to us, not even in a scrimmage. So it was an easy no-brainer for them. And then we ended up beating them 10-5. That was a moment where we win that game. I remember the last minute knowing when we had Jeff Powers shoots this just ridiculous shot from like 8 meters. It goes in, it's 10-5. And just thinking to myself, we're going to the gold medal game, you know, that, and we just annihilated one of the greatest teams in history. Guys like Vujosinovic, Udovicic, I mean, that are amazing players and will always be Savic. I mean, that team is just, they're all stars. They're all guys I looked up to. So that was a moment right there that I'll never forget. Obviously playing in the gold medal game was phenomenal. Losing doesn't feel so good, but to be able to get there was great. And yeah, I mean, just having, being able from a kid that believed in it, in himself and his country growing up and everyone saying, look, you know, it's too hard. Europe's too strong. You know, now it's not Yugoslavia, it's Serbia, Croatia, Montenegro. It's three countries, right? Like there's Hungary, there's all these teams, they're all stars. No one knows who you guys are. You'll never win a medal. Maybe you'll get top five, right? And all of a sudden we get second in the world. I think that kind of opened people's eyes as to, look, it doesn't matter if you grow up in Serbia or Croatia, you can do it. You can do it. You have to build a team and you have to believe in yourself and you have to train and anyone can be there. It's hard, but but you can do it.
Yeah, it's hard for sure. Yeah, so when you go into the Olympics, so there's nothing harder maybe to reach these kind of targets from a personal point of view to go or to attend these kind of events. So when there are also memories or highlights from your side, are there maybe also funny stories you mentioned or you can share with us?
So many
funny stories, maybe.
There's too many funny stories. I mean, every Olympics has its own, every Olympics is different, right? It was special in its own way. You know, Greece in 2004, our coach was Ratko Rudic, and we lost. Before the games, he was so upset in one of our trainings that he came and he all of a sudden we see him open the door, and the way it worked, it was we all were in the same dorm room type, like a hotel room with four bedrooms. And all of a sudden we see Ratko come in with a screwdriver, and he starts screwing driving the door. And we're sitting here going, what's he doing? And we realize he's taking the door off, and then he's taking the door off his door so we can't close the door so that he would sit and watch TV and watch us the entire time.
Okay.
So all of us were so intimidated. We wouldn't even come out of our rooms. So then that main area where we were supposed to hang, it was.
it's also some kind of coaching stuff. So just to remove the doors from the rooms.
That's the way you keep an eye on the players right there.
Yeah, so I guess also when you mentioned each Olympic Games are really different, yeah? So I have their own spirit, for example, maybe, and also the culture, yeah? So I think maybe also something which is very different from event to event or from Olympic Games to Olympic Games is really the culture that you're able to experience also other cultures in Asia, in China, in Europe, in Australia or whatever. Yeah. So
that's my favorite part, right? Like I remember in 2000, my first Olympics, showing up to the cafeteria, and I would literally open the door, and all of a sudden I saw sushi in the Asia section, and I couldn't believe it. There was every country in the world, and I'm a big foodie, so I love all kinds of food. There was everything, kimchi, and I would just immediately, I would go and eat all in this area, all in this area. And I always found it so funny, because some of the other teams, they would just eat McDonald's, because you could eat free McDonald's. And I'm sitting here thinking to them, what is wrong with you guys? There's sushi, there's, you know, fish, and there's steaks, and there's pizza, and there's pasta, and then everyone's sitting there eating McDonald's, you know. But it was the cafeteria to me was like my favorite part of the Olympics. You know, unfortunately, later on, the last, after Beijing and that scare of steroids in the Peking duck, the last two Olympics, the food was really subpar, because they started overcooking things. They stopped being so creative. But still, that's my favorite. All the cultures, seeing what they eat. You know, you go for breakfast and I'm eating fruit. And then you go and you see like a lot of the Asian cultures are eating a soup. And then you're seeing the South American cultures are eating the all the fruit and the bread. It's great seeing, you know.
Yeah, so from other guests in the podcast, I already heard that they are really inspired by the Olympic Village. Yeah, so that you are really able to connect other countries or other athletes and try to build your own network. Yeah, so that you are able to talk to also athletes from other sports. And yet you are able to talk to basketball players, so that you're even as a German guy coming to the Olympics, and you're really fascinated to talk to Dirk Nowitzki, for example, or to other NBA stars, which are you are only aware of the television.
Yeah, I agree. And I met Dirk, and he was an absolutely amazing guy, super tall.
Yeah, super tall. I can imagine. It's 2 meters. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you see everything you're doing, everything you work for, and you're seeing all these guys that you see on TV, and they're just normal people as well. They're sitting there going and eating in the dorms, and and walking around, you know. And so it puts into perspective of how special that event is when all these stars are just among you and work just as hard to get there, and they're playing a sport just like you are. It's just their sport is a lot more popular than ours.
Yeah, so it makes maybe these kind of people more normal again. Yeah, so as you mentioned, that these are kind of also normal people at the end.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you also following the European water polo scene somehow? So you also played in Europe, in Italy? We have the Champions League. Do you also following maybe during the live streaming also the national leagues somehow from Hungary, Serbia, Germany maybe?
Yeah, so I follow all of it a little bit, right? I think it's been great now where, especially here in the U.S., it's hard to watch water polo in Europe. It's never really been. I played in Jug, Dubrovnik for 2 years, and Kotor, Montenegro for 2 years, and in Italy for five, and Brazil for four, and all these places, you know, you really couldn't watch me play. They were trying to charge you for like FINA TV or whatever it was, and it was terrible. And now all of a sudden, right, we told our kids yesterday, everyone should be watching the games today, right? World League starts today, and it's some great matchups, Italy versus Hungary. The ability to watch water polo is so much easier than it used to be, that we need to take advantage of it. And so I try and watch a little bit of the Hungary games. I usually watch the highlights. I mean, we're pretty busy in the morning when the live games are going. That's when our academy starts. But yeah, I follow all the players I used to play with and that are still playing, and all the coaches. So it's fun because all the players I've pretty much played with, or at least the older ones of every team, and now all the coaches I've played with, you know, all of them. Yeah. It's like you look at the Hungarian championship, it's like Zsolt Varga was one of the first teammates I had and was almost like my mentor and helped me to learn how to become a professional. Tommy Martz was also a player I played with, right? So it's really fun.
Do you think there are any, let's say, differences between the teams or the game philosophy or tactics between the U.S. and the European teams?
For sure. I think the Europeans play a much more vertical game than we do, right? I think the only way the U.S., I think we can take bits and pieces from Europe and play more vertically at points. But the only way we're really going to compete is the horizontal game, which much more movement and counterattack and speed. I just think in general, that's been our game since the water polo has begun, right? Back in the 80s when we were a dominant country in the Olympics, it was because we were fast. We would do picks and we would, you know, counter teams and press teams. And now I think we've lost a little of that, and we need to come back and be proud of who we are as a country. And I think more and more other countries need to find their identity as well. You know, I think everyone's gone to this point where it's, you know, let's hire a Serbian, let's hire a Hungarian, whatever, and they're going to come and change our team. But, you know, every country, every culture is different for a reason, and you need to find out who you are. Otherwise, you're never going to know who you are. And stop trying to play like Hungary, because you're never going to be Hungary. Hungary, no one's going to be Hungary. They're an amazing style, and they're my favorite style to watch, by the way. Like most of the teachings I do come from Hungarian styles, Hungarian tea. I love their style, but the Americans will never be Hungarian. We can take some Hungarian. I think, to me, maybe the most innovative coach in the world is the Japanese coach, right? I mean, his way, his style that maybe people agree or don't agree with, it suits his team. And in 5 years, if all of a sudden they get a 6'6 center and a big goalkeeper, now all of a sudden he's probably going to tweak that style and they could be the best team in the world, right? But we all need to stop following and start thinking and leading and finding out what our identity is. And I think here in the U.S., our women's team has found that. They found their identity from day one. Now they're just riding on it. And our men need to find that. That's what we need to come back to. And I think Australia, they're similar. They're not going to play. They can't play like Croatians, but they're a very horizontal team. They're very fast and they have an identity and they're difficult to play against. And I think South America, if everyone starts to take bits and pieces, but truly find their identity and play their style of water polo, then everyone can be successful, right? You look in soccer, it's the same, right? German, you know, I'm Brazilian, so we have a, you know, we have our style, but ultimately, and Germany, you know, crushed us in the World Cup when I was down there. But ultimately,
sorry.
I think,
sorry for that.
But ultimately, what's great about when you watch the World Cup is you watch Colombia and they have their style, yeah. And then you watch Argentina and they're a different style. And everyone probably takes a little bit from Brazil and a little bit from Germany. Ultimately, I believe that a little bit, but you don't say, "Oh yeah, Colombia's playing German style." No, they're Colombian. You know, yeah. They're Mexican, and I think that's something we need to do in our sport.
Yeah, yeah. So when you mentioned that each team or each country have to find their own DNA and find their own philosophy of the game and find their self, although go back to the core skills. I have also these kind of discussion with Elvis, who's the national team coach of Australia, saying, okay, when he came to Australia, it was very hard at the very beginning, because the situation and the behavior of the players are really different to the one in Europe, maybe.
Yeah.
Do we have also some kind of experiences saying, okay, it's better for young players or to go to Europe, play in Europe, maybe also for a limited period of time, going back to the US and then develop the US team there based on their experience in Europe?
For sure. I think it's funny. I would say that, you know, everyone has the mindset that you need to go to Europe to get better, right? But I would say that you go to Europe to get the confidence that you're just as good, if not better. And I think that's the mindset. Like when I before going to Europe, right, it was, I always thought, oh my goodness, like we're playing Croatia, I'm so afraid. We're playing Serbia, they're the best, right? It was, we're playing Hungary. And then all of a sudden I go play in Italy, and the luxury is you're playing against the best players in the world all the time. So of course you're going to get better. But all of a sudden you start to realize, interesting, I train harder because I played with all these guys. I'm training way harder than these guys. Oh, I can score on this guy all the time. Interesting. I may be mentally stronger than this. Wow. And all of a sudden it's that confidence that now I go back and go, hey guys, we can beat these guys. We're just as good, if not better, right? So I think that's the big thing people are missing out on is the confidence that you get.
Maybe just talking about the current situation with Corona and so on. So maybe you can give us some more information about the current situation in the U.S., maybe in this kind of situation with Corona.
Yeah. So right now, the way, you know, I'm in California, so it's pretty bad. The U.S. is in a bit of chaos, right? We have Trump.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe we cover this in a separate episode.
Yeah, that's right. We have the chaos, but so, you know, it's interesting because you have certain states that have just stayed open, like Florida, and the numbers have been rising, but not crazy. And then you have California that's shut down for the most part, but our numbers are still going up. And so for us here, they've shut down pools, probably high school season is going to be canceled. And really you see a lot of players leaving our sport, and it's really sad because at a young age, they're allowed to play baseball, they're allowed to play basketball, but they can't play water polo, and it makes no sense. And all they're doing is allowing kids to swim, but the reason you play water polo is probably because you don't like swimming. If I was a...
You have to swim, but it's not really the favorite part of
the game. That's right. That's not the favorite part. And so, you know, you get kids to love the sport, and then when they show up at 14 years old, so excited to play, then you go, hey, guess what? You have to swim now. And but they do it because they love it. But if at 10 years old, all you're doing is swimming, you're going to go do something else. And so it's pretty sad. I've been lucky enough to have two private clubs that we train out of, and we've stayed open and we've allowed water polo to play normally. But for the most part, things are shut down here. Restaurants have shut down. The hospitals are full. I mean, they're at max capacity. So that's just what it is.
Maybe then we can go back to the better parts of life at the moment, talking about water polo. So you have a cooperation. So you mentioned several times your camps and your clinics and so on. So maybe you can give us a little bit more background and information about your program, or what you mentioned at the beginning, that you are really now your own boss with your company and with your brand at the moment. And also with the cooperation with Mitsu maybe.
Yeah. So there's two main things that 6-8 Sports has started. The one right now where I'm at currently, our office is in California, and it's a 6-8 Academy, right? And we're planning on growing the academy around the world. And really, it's just a way for kids to get high level training, maybe at places that they wouldn't be able to get. Especially in the United States, you get kids who come from Texas that want to be Olympians, or want to go to Stanford, but they're, you know, they don't have the same opportunities as everyone else does. So you come here, we train them. I have my father, who's an Olympic coach, myself, Maggie Steffens. We train them for 3 hours every morning. We do mental training. We have virtual reality now where kids get in the goggles and they break down certain water polo situations. And then Mitse, Michael Zellmer, is our goalie coach, who's been great. And then so these kids go and join clubs at night and play nonstop year round. And we've had one signed with USC, another signed with Santa Clara. We've had a lot of coaches calling us about these athletes, and it's just great to see their improvement. And then the other is our, you know, the technology side. We have a game desk that connects to an athlete's phone, that connects to an output. So essentially any kid can go on our 6-8 app, download it. You have tons of videos to improve. You go through a measurable. You look in baseball, basketball, they have something called the combine, right? Mm-hmm. Where athletes go through certain drills and you see kind of where they stand. In our sport, there's never been something like that. So we created it and it's been great. We have over 9,000 athletes who've gone through it, and we can see kind of, you know, the athletes are able to see where they stand compared with athletes from all over the world. And then they can improve on those areas so that they can eventually achieve their dreams, right? Mm-hmm. That's an easier way than a coach saying, "Oh, you didn't make the team." Well, why? "Oh, you're not good enough." Well, why? "You're not fast enough. Go swim." What? So this is a way it's like, "Oh, no, you work here, you work here, you work here," so they can be self-motivated more.
And I saw that really on your website that you're really also have a co-founder, Maggie Steffens, right?
Yeah.
So it's really, so let me better understand these kind of apps. So you compete to each other all over the world?
So the academy itself is athletes from all over the world that come, and we only we choose a small amount and we practice. It's like a club team, and we train together, and then they go play with another club team at night, but they get that extra training so that they're growing at a higher rate than the other athletes, right? They're double the training, as well as now they're in the mecca of water polo in the U.S., which is Southern California, the most clubs, the better teams and everything. And then as far as clinics and those kind of things, or as far as the measurables, you're right. Yeah, we all over the world. We've done camps in Italy. We've done camps South Africa, Australia, U.S., New Zealand, Brazil. And we have all those numbers. So if you're an athlete who goes through our 6-8 challenge, on your phone, you're going to get your result. And if it's yellow, it means you're okay. If it's red, it means you're not so great, and it's green. And then we have videos for you to improve. So this is a way for you to, yes, see where you are in the world. And I think eventually it's going to be fun because we have so many athletes. Eventually these athletes will be on the national team. It'll be fun to see where they, you know, what they were doing at a young age, so we can start using this data to help the future athletes, right? Like, you talk about me, I was on the Olympic team at 18, but what did I do? Was I strong in some suit? Was I fast somewhere? Did I have a shot? Like, how many goals did I score? How many games did I play? No one knows that. And that's a big problem in our sport, right? And if we knew that, we could say, okay, hey, Tony did this. Maybe we can start following a trend that this is what successful athletes do, but we don't know it, so we don't know.
Maybe when I understand it correctly, then it's really the development or the individual development of each athlete based on figures and numbers.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Okay, so maybe this goes also in the same direction as the next question regarding social media. So because social media is also something related to apps, or apps are also related to social media this way, and we also covering a younger target group of people, because we would like to go in touch with younger people, because we need young kids to come to water polo. What do you think, what role social media plays in this orchestra of maybe media channels? So because we mentioned before that it's a responsibility of each of us to do more. So during these days, each of us are able really to do more during via the social media channels of each of us.
That's right. First off, I hate social media.
Okay, so full stop. So we end this question at this point.
No, I came from the generation that like everything was when social media, as I was older, it started getting popular. And so I do it because I know the importance of it. And I started it because I knew I needed it for the sport, right? To inspire, to get people from all over understanding what we're doing, things like that. But you are 100% right. That's what needs the athletes need to do. This is their channel, right? And what they don't understand is the more they do it, the better it is. They're going to get sponsorships and money. People are going to look at you for that. Yep. And then when you do that, it helps the sport. Like if I was on the cover of Men's Health 1 year during the Olympics, and I can remember people saying, why is Tony on the cover of Men's Health? It's instead of maybe someone else in Europe or another sport. And it's like, you guys, this is so huge for our sport. We have a water polo player on the cover of Men's Health. This is great. If we can get, Dennis Varga or Filipovic or these guys on CNN talking about, this is huge, right? This is our sport. And I think social media is a great way now. You have to use it. You have to take advantage of it if you like it or not. But this is definitely a way that we can start to grow our sport and connect, especially athletes here that use social media so much, with the European athletes, right? I tell everyone, one of my favorite athletes on the women's side to watch is Ekaterina Prokoyeva. I love her. I love her videos and everything. And you follow her because she does a great job of showing some great new videos, some shooting styles. She's so inspiring to me. And Maggie Steffens, right, our partner. But there's so many great water polo players. They don't even have an Instagram. They don't have a Twitter. And, they look at it as, I'm over that, or I don't need that. I get it. But again, you're not inspiring anyone now, which sucks, because I would love to tell a kid your story and to have them fall in love with you. And maybe they will be great because of two videos that you posted.
Yeah. So I think that in this case, we need some kind of mind shifting, maybe, so that it's not really the channel for the athletes. So because it's maybe owned by the athletes, but they are not really doing all the social media work for themselves at the end, but also for the community and for the sport.
Yeah, that's right.
So talking about social media, we are right now on a podcast format. So you mentioned already that you also started a podcast during the last couple of months, I guess. So maybe you can tell us about your podcast.
Yeah, so the Tony Azevedo podcast, right? I have at Water Polo Tony is my Twitter and my Instagram. You can follow us on 68 Sports or Azevedo Water Polo. But yeah, I've been asked with Dave, who runs our podcast. He's a comedian and just a hilarious guy. And, I've been asked to do it with him for a while. And we just, he's working, I'm working. And finally, during this shutdown, it's like, yes, let's talk water polo. And it's really been fun, where I've just...
By the way, the same moment or the same time frame I started also these kind of podcasts, or my podcast, during these kind of lockdown period.
That's right. And you had to figure to do something, and I why not do what I love to do, which is talk water polo. And so we've had some fun guests, and looking forward to this new year and trying to be a little more professional and stick to a schedule and invite some interesting guests. I think the more we can talk water polo, and especially we get a lot of the kids out here listening. And so it's great if I can start to bring some international guests as well.
In this case, so you mentioned before that we have not unlimited time today. So your father's waiting for you, maybe for the next part of the clinic. In this case, I'm very thankful. So thanks for your time to be my guest today in the podcast. I'm really looking forward to for your next episode on your podcast. So maybe then we can also somehow cooperate in some times.
That's right. I'd love to. Awesome, Andres. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And best wishes for the next couple of days, and stay safe and healthy.
You too.
Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
So we are already at the end again, and I hope we could provide you with some interesting stories and background informations again. Hopefully you will join in also in our next episode, and I wish you all the best until then, and make sure you follow also our social media accounts to be up to date. So see you next time.